Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, welcome to Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Tamar. I'm Matt Unlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Kat Solin on the podcast. She is a director of so many amazing things. She has a new special out on Peacock. It's called Chris Fleming Hell. It is coming out August 18th, 2023. It's like a bonkers, crazy special. Like, we're talking about Bo Burnham and we're talking about Dimitri Martin. We're talking about all these comedy specials that we just like love because they're so different and have such a unique personality, but are still very much of the comedian. And this comedian, Chris Fleming, if you're not aware of him, has a really interesting point of view, really interesting visual aesthetic, and Kat made this pretty insane comedy special, so you should check that out. But she's also directed a show for Adult Swim called The Shivering Truth, and she's directed episodes of Yo Gabba Gabba. She did a show with Michelle Obama for Netflix. She's done it all. She's made music videos for MTV, Bright Eyes, a lot of stop motion stuff, a lot of animation, a lot of live action.
A lot of puppetry as well. Kind of all over the place, really.
She's right now kind of at that A level of stop motion animation. Like, she's working with the people from Laika, right? Who are they, the ones that made Coraline? And
Yeah. They're kind of like the big stop motion house, basically.
She's done so many things. We talk about art. I found like one of the most interesting things about her is that she thinks via drawing. She's having conversations with people, she just starts sketching, and that's her favorite way of communicating. And I mean, obviously, I don't know about you, but I was so jealous.
Yeah,
for me, it's like, oh wow, another face looking straight at the camera.
Yeah
all
exactly.
You can draw.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's just like, okay, like you see some shoulders this time, or maybe even a button or two on their shirt. Yeah, no, boy, what a treat this episode was. You know, in talking to her, I was reminded of being around the type of person that thinks visually or is kind of like just a little more freewheeling with the way that they approach their art and their filmmaking. And sure, that's tactically, that means like, oh, maybe she draws instead, or you know, their process is different, but like there's an attitude to a certain type of filmmaker where there's a little bit more anything goes, or you can throw puppets into a stand-up comedy special or animation, just a freewheeling sort of openness that I found really inspiring and reinvigorating. As a little behind the scenes, whenever we get pitched a guest, Oren and I will kind of email each other back and forth and be like, oh, do we have a take on this person? Or, you know, have we heard this story before? Or, oh, you know, we haven't had a horror film director on in, you know, a few episodes or whatever. Like, we kind of chat back and forth about whether or not we should, you know, talk to this person if we can bring something to the table. And I think this is the first time I just said yes without consulting with you in the slightest bit. I've been a fan of Kat for a really long time. And so it was like such a treat to get to talk to her. And I was like, well, if I don't get to have Kat Solin on this podcast, then why am I making one? I will quit if you have a problem with it, Oren, and you were totally fine with it, of course.
Yeah, my only problem with having Kat Solin on the podcast was that it led to you not quitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My apologies, everyone who wants my slot. Yeah. They just want solo Auron episodes.
If you want to campaign for solo Auron episodes, what I suggest you do is check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It's a place you can go give us $1, $2, $4, $7, $9, or $26, and it will go straight to our editor, Noah, and some server fees, some other things. You know, we pay for things. No, we really do appreciate it. It does help us. It is the blood that flows through the heart of this podcast is Patreon. So we appreciate it. Patreon.com/justshootitpod.
Anyway, without further delay, let's hop into our conversation with Kat Solen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Hey, so we're here with Kat Solen, and we hear you hate commercials. What's the deal with that?
Right, before I do want to, real quick, Kat, can you just give us maybe your description of the style of work that you do, just to paint the picture for everyone?
Yes. Let's see. What I say to people that I do is I tend to do a lot of practical effects. I do a lot of live action and stop motion. I really let the tone and the subject matter tell me, like, exactly what style of filmmaking the thing is going to be and what kind of effects I'm going to do or use or what kind of technique I'm going to use. And I'm sure every director would say that. I feel like I kind of push it to the nth degree.
So your stop motion can be like a little more tactile, a little more grotesque, a little more surreal, right? You know, like your human faces are exaggerated. There's like a cartooning element to it, all of that stuff. So, well,
yeah, specifically with Shivering Truth, that is the case. Yes, that TV show. In and that show, that is definitely the case.
And that's the Adult Swim show?
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel that, like, was Adult Swim gives
stop,
like,
motion
some
animation
idea.
Yeah. Mixed, like, media gets you tone. Pretty close. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
and
you
were additional crew on Don John, I see.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt and I go way back, and he asked me to do the behind the scenes on that movie. I shot all their behind the scenes.
Oh, that's cool.
And I helped them with a little part that has some, like, time lapse pixelation in it.
But you make crazy stuff.
Crazy stuff, yes.
And also
you have walked away from commercials. Why no commercials? What was the thinking behind that?
Well, I had gone down to only doing them if I was single bid, which we know that
the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was sick of. I'm the same way. I'm I also kind of stepped away from music videos, and I also was already single bit on music videos for a while. But commercials, the amount of effort and work that I was putting in to treatments, and I could not sustain. I couldn't keep working for free like that. I couldn't keep going on multiple calls all the time about it and not having the job come through at the last minute. And then also, unless it's like a really amazing concept, it lives in the zeitgeist for like a week, if you're lucky. And I really want to make things that live forever. And it's the main reason I make anything. That's the main reason I think everybody makes things, is they want to make things that live past their lives. So I really found that I was wasting my time, and I couldn't, and I've been spending that time instead, like doing fine art and writing feature scripts and doing what I actually want to be doing. It's not the best timing with the strike, but it is, I don't know. I'm sustaining it, but I've been doing this for a really long time. So I guess that's also the case. I'm very used to the highs and lows of having money and not having money.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, music to our ears, certainly. I think also, you know, listeners at home, do yourself a favor, just like hop onto, you know, Instagram, like just Google Kat Solin real quick, and you can tell immediately how obvious your reel must be. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, you can pitch and you can like put together
a commercial reel.
Yeah,
what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is that the style is so distinct that like a creative director should be able to know whether that's what they want or not. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like, look, Oren and I do a lot of like, you know, Oren's a little more VFX driven, but like a lot of dialogue comedy spots. So like, I get why. You can look at a reel with a bunch of medium shots of people making jokes and then cutting to reaction, and you're not sure who you want to pick, right? But like, the more distinct a reel becomes, the clearer it should, the easier the choice should be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I have a lot of friends in the ad agency world, and I've had this conversation with a lot of them, and I'm really bold about that kind of stuff, like at dinner parties, and they've said, like, creative directors who have said to me, Kat, we wish it was that way too. It's just so instilled in our industry that we have to show three options every time, especially for the big stuff. And if we don't show those three options, our client won't work with us. And I'm just like, yeah, but you know who you're gonna, you know who it's gonna be.
Right. You know, you're wasting two people's time for sure.
Let the two people who it's not going to be, let them know. Like,
That, literally bid Kat Solin and two people that are in film school right now.
Totally opposite.
That just need the practice to talk to agency people.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
But there's those companies, the Unilevers and Procter & Gamble's and all these companies who their corporate policy is they have to see at least three bids. But today I was talking to someone about it who's like trying to fight that system and not do that. And I was saying, like, the reason those rules exist is because they want to make sure they're getting the best deal possible, right? It's like a money thing. But, like, then why do you need three treatments, right? Like, there's this other director, Alex Prager. Do you know her?
Yeah.
She's got, like, such a unique visual style, too.
Yeah.
And, obviously, there's, like, the Wes Andersons of the world. Like, I'm sure he's never triple bidding, you know? I think if you do have kind of such a distinct style, it makes sense to just say, hey, we need a Kat Solin for this. Can she do it? You know?
But I think it's also what you're saying about money. I've lost so many jobs to people who've just underbid me. You know, it has nothing to do. They want me, but they'll do it for $1 less. And I bet you there are so many people out there who are fine with ripping off Wes Anderson and Alex Prager, you know, for a lower price. And I don't want to be negative. I mean, everybody's got to do what they got to do. But like, it's tough. It's really tough. And then also, you're working for these companies that are, I don't know. I don't want to be too.
But I just did a couple jobs in a row where they're like, hey, we love Oren. He's our favorite of the bidders. But this other company said they can do it for $50,000 less. Mm-hmm. So if you can match this price, which is below the budget we told you we had originally, then it's your job. And we're like, okay. And you know, I'm not really that involved in that process, but then I get the job. I'm like, okay, can we get the Steadicam and the jib and then this and then that? And they're like, no, we don't have any money. It's that 2-day shoot is now a 1-day shoot. I'm like, what are you talking about? Wasn't the budget X? And they're like, oh no, it's X minus 50. I'm like, how did the budget go down? Like we had to in order to get the job. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, really? they're ruining lives.
Yeah, it's I find it to be really criminal, and I just can't keep doing it. But I also, you know, who knows? Maybe someday I'll do another commercial. I don't know.
So instead of commercials, you're doing like TV, right?
Yeah. TV stuff. I'm writing features that I want to make, and developing other ones with writers. And I've been working on some fine art stuff, like sculptures and paintings and things.
I guess on that note, like, I'm curious, you know, just watching like the trailer for The Shivering Truth, which is totally insane, and just all your other stuff, like how much, I'm curious what your process is. So The Shivering Truth is a stop motion show. It's very, has like a lot of crazy visuals. Right? Like, who is coming up with those visuals and who's making the dolls? Yeah. Like, how involved in that are you? Is it like,
I am deeply involved from the very beginning until the very, very end. So the show was created by Vernon Chapman, who created Wonder Chosen. He created Xavier Renegade Angel. He's written on South Park for a long time. He's brilliant.
Boy, Wonder Chosen, boy, what a show.
Yeah. I know. It's still one of my favorites.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't mean to derail us, but I could talk about Wonder Shows in forever. Sorry, as you work at.
No, but sure. you can feel him in everything he does in a way that I really admire and respect. Mm-hmm. And I love. Anyway, but he and I have been good friends for almost 20 years. And we kind of developed this show Shivering Truth over a 7-year period, where either he was living in New York most of the time, I was living in LA most of the time, but we both had times when we were either in New York or LA in the same place. And we would get together and just sit and talk about what we wanted to make. And that talking always involved me sitting there drawing what he was talking about. I think by drawing. I explain everything by drawing. I feel like it's the closest way for me to show people what's inside my head. And I don't know how.
Is this like something ever since you were a child? Like, did you study fine art or like how?
Yeah. I mean, I always drew. My parents used to just give me a pencil to like have me calm down or like to occupy my time. Like, they would hand me a pencil and I would sit and draw, and I would stay up really late at night watching Nick at Night and drawing all night long, well into my late high school years. It's always been the most therapeutic thing for me, and also the thing that is the most showing, just be the thing that I feel like I have the most control over. Mm-hmm. And I really love it. And so a lot of times we would get together and we would do that. And then finally, just one random day after us talking for 7 years, Vernon sent me a script and said, hey, I have 6 of these. Read it. Let me know what you think. I think this is a show we should make. And I read it and I was like, I felt like he had given me child. Like, I have no desire to be a mother, but I was like, you've given me the greatest gift I could ever have. Like, this has been our thing that has been in our collective consciousness for 7 years, and now here it is. And what I love about how Vernon writes is he's a very intellectual surrealist at heart, and he writes things that emotionally make complete sense, but visually sound absolutely impossible. And that is that's all I want, is to be given a script that sounds impossible to make and I have to figure out how to make it visually. And I told him he should write on the front of his scripts, like, go ahead and fucking try. It's my favorite thing. So I like.
And was this connected at all to any of the drawings you had done earlier?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was all stuff we had talked about. All of it was stuff we had talked about. And so we picked one, and he had a really good relationship with Adult Swim. He had made a bunch of shows there, and you know, he had been working as a writer for a very long time already. And he went and sold it. He just went to do Adult, because I had already been working for Adult Swim doing their their commercials, like, for them. They do their own in-house commercials. I had been doing those for a while. And so they knew who I was. And he said, I want to do this show with Kat. And they said, okay, here's money for a pilot. Go for it. And we didn't have to pitch it. We didn't have to do anything. We just started working.
And when he says with Kat, is it like you're the director and he's like the showrunner?
So it's our credits are co-director. We talk all the time when we're in production. However, he's usually in New York and I'm usually at the stage. I'm usually working on the show at the stage. But I'm texting him 20 times a day. We do an hour and a half to 3 hour phone call every morning. We are very deeply connected, but I have the experience in stop motion. I draw, I do. So the way that we do it is we get together either in New York or LA and we walk around the city all day long, literally for 20 hours or something, and sit at different places, coffee shops, parks, bars, restaurants, everywhere we can. And we talk through every single tiny part of it. And I thumbnail the whole entire show.
And this is, you already have a script that's in screenplay format.
Yeah.
And you are you're going in order from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. Every line of dialogue in a different location on Zagat's.
Only five star, only very
TripAdvisor.
Yeah, just very fancy. Yeah. I actually have to carry my iPad and my sketchbook because my iPad runs out of batteries and I have to switch to my sketchbook. And then I get tired of the sketchbook and I have to go back to the iPad when it charges. And so then I have to compile it all later. But he knows the scripts so well that they're just in his head. Like, he rarely has to even acknowledge, like, look at them. It's really great.
And do you use Procreate? What do you draw with?
I use Procreate. On the iPad, I use Procreate. On the Cintiq, which is right next to me, I use just Photoshop.
Cool. I just got an iPad Pro. Kind of recently. Yeah, and I've just want to draw on frames, like, give notes, draw boards, you know, and it's
Media Res and Frame.io both have functions where you can draw on the edit. That I love doing that.
So it knows that you have an iPad.
You can draw on the edit with a mouse too, actually.
Yeah.
You can just do it in I've never done like proper drawing of any sort, but you can like circle a thing and be like, this is the thing I dislike or love or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, boom, Mike.
It's great for VFX.
Yeah. Perfect for that. I'm curious, and we're already into it, but like this, I'm curious about the way just a typical day works for you, Kat. Like, when you're not wandering the streets of New York brainstorming, like, because your work is so tactile and mixed media, you've got puppets, you've got animation, you know, you said you're working on fine arts projects as well. Like, in what ways are you getting your hands dirty, and in what ways are you working with different department heads or craftspeople to bring your vision to life? Walk us through just how you collaborate and what you literally physically do versus what you collaborate on.
So when I'm in production, you mean specifically?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So like it depends on if it's live action or stop motion, but for Shivering in stop motion, it also depends on what part of the show we're at, but
like when you guys are building things first and then animating them and then
I mean when we did the pilot, it very much was linear in that way. It was storyboarding, cutting and designing the animatic, then, you know, building the sets and puppets, and then shooting, and then editing. Well, editing also sort of while you're shooting, but like you do with live action. But it is, when we do the season, it's tiered, so everything kind of starts at once. Like we start with all the puppet, and also because we already did the pilot, there's a lot of I'm very proud of season two of Shivering because I was able to work with my team to come up with a very functional modular system for the puppets, because we have a new puppet in every scene. So like we have sometimes 150 puppets per episode. Sometimes
when you say 150 puppets, you mean like 150 different characters?
Yeah. And then in stop motion. Okay. Wait. So I feel like I'm getting too deep.
Unpack it. No. No, for sure. Give us the whole thing, Kat. Yeah.
Because in stop motion, you have to make multiples of all the characters and all the sets, because you're shooting multiples at once. But I, okay. So on, if we're in the thick of Shivering season two, I wake up at like 7, do my call with Vernon. Then I rode my bike to the studio, is in Portland, Oregon. The best place to do stop motion. No offense to Los Angeles. Like, they're incredible studios here. It's just that, for in good and bad ways, Leica, made it so that Portland is the mecca of stop motion. So all of the best, all of the best fabricators are drawn to Portland. But there are incredible fabricators in Los Angeles too. And I wish I could do some jobs here too, but I've done all of my big stop motion things in Portland. Anyway, so I ride my bike to set or walk to set. And then we start the day with a big board meeting, which is, we run 15 stages at once when we're in the thick of a season. And so that's 15 individual sets all at once. So we have a giant grid of all those 15 stages.
Can I ask a truly naive question about that, actually? How big is a stage when you're shooting in stop motion?
Like an airplane hangar. Like huge. Oh, you mean each individual set?
Yeah, each individual set. You know, you go to a museum or you watch a behind the scenes video, you can tell they're like a few feet by a few feet. But so are you in an airplane hangar with 15 different sets running basically all at once? Gotcha. Yes, it's not like you're in you don't rent an office building and like every single cubicle is a set or something like that.
You need a proper stage, and that I think that is a common misconception with animation, especially with stop motion, is that it's crafty, it's cute, it's something you can just do alone in your house. That's what the people like to pay you as if you're doing that. It takes up just as much space, and it's each stage. The smallest stages are like 5 feet by 5 feet. The biggest stages can go up to 15 feet by 15 feet, 20 feet by 20, like depends on what it is. And also the size of the production overall and how much money you have. But the, I love that I can be so,
we can get deeper. The other point, right, is like to your point about like, it's fun to romanticize the idea of it being scrappy, but like the physics of light doesn't change, right? Like you still need to like have the space to light things properly. And yes, your set is small, but that's still, you still have to move lights around in order to make it look the way you need it to look, right?
Yeah, we use tiny light. Nowadays, we use tiny lights. When I started, we were using big tungsten lights. Now we have all kinds of amazing itty-bitty lights.
Oh, that's cool.
They're so small. Like, so you can't even, like, see the actual device that the light is coming from.
Oh, but that's really fascinating. So is it, are they, interesting. Are there complications just in terms of like sculpting the light? Like are they really directional, or like do you have little flags and things?
We have tiny. I actually have they're in another room, but that we have like little itty bitty finger, like little finger flags, like teeny tiny flags. They DPs
that is,
will
that
build
is
their
cute.
Own.
That isn't helping your point.
It's big and tough. I promise you. It's very serious.
Yeah, yeah.
It does scale, right? Like if you got like a light that's like the size of this light behind me, like a 36-inch round light, it's like having like
the sun.
Or maybe not the sun, but like a 10-foot wide light. Like a 12 by, right? Like for a human.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and then And you also have to make the set. So you have an animator who is standing at your set for 12 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And they are doing tiny movements over and over and over again. And that can injure you so easily. So you have to build the set so that the movement of the animator is considered as much as possible so that they don't get hurt. And then also it makes it so that sometimes you have to cut the set in half and shoot half of it and then plate the other half, or you have to have it so that there's a walk-in thing that you can walk into and then walk out, like step into, step out of, and then plate the front of it. Like you really have to work with the animator to design the space. And a lot of times it's really great to work with. There are production designers and art directors who have animated. And that's really incredible because they get it, you know, like sometimes they just don't get it and they don't have a lot of sympathy for it, you know, because they haven't done it. But that also takes up space, and that tells you where all your lights have to go, because you don't want your animator having to step over a light every time or they'll trip it and they'll mess up the whole shot and you have to reshoot it. You know,
and I imagine nowadays everything is on some sort of motion control rig so that you can plate things much easier than back in the day.
Yes, except that because you're using the tiny lights, a lot of times you're also doing very long exposures. So you have to consider how long your plates are going to take. Your plates can take, like, for example, I made the logo for Monkey Paw for their opening sequence logo. And when we shot that, shooting it took 48 hours. And then we had to also shoot the plate, which took 48 hours. So it was like...
Wait, what's the plate versus the...
A clean plate, so you can remove all the rigging, just like in any kind of post effects. But
but because the exposure was so long, it just has to take that long. Wild.
Yeah.
Wild.
And there were parts of that where we had to literally pull half the set off so that the animator could get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have to reshoot it with the other part in there. And it's the funnest puzzle game that you could ever do, with the most high stakes funnest puzzle game.
That is wild. Got it. And so then in terms of just a regular production day, then are you getting rushes then thereafter? Are you checking in with an animator mid shot ever? Like, how does that work?
So, well, on Shivering, films, when you do stop motion film, you have money to do some of the shots a couple times if you absolutely have to. Leica likes to really do a lot of takes just for fun because they have a lot of money. I on Shivering have no money to do any extra takes whatsoever. Everything we're using is the first take. So I have video taps in my office. I have a video tap to every single camera. And I can watch, I try to schedule it so I make sure I'm there for crucial moments to watch where the direction the animator is going with the move or with the acting or with any gag or anything. And literally, because I've animated things myself, I'm not as good at it as they are, but because I've done it, I can see like, oh, they're going a direction they should not be going that direction. And it's like the tiniest thing. It's you, of course, have like blocking conversations ahead of time. You have video taps. You create video reference that they follow a lot of times. But, you know, it's they're working 24 frames per second. So every single little choice could change everything. So I will see a thing going like a few frames off the mark and I'll rush in and be like, hey, I just noticed that you're going this. Yeah. Like, get out of here. This is my stage. No, I'll be like, oh, I noticed that like we need a character to take a credit card out of their wallet right here. And he hasn't started reaching for it yet. You might need to start that sooner. So let's dial back a couple frames.
Interesting.
But also I've been very lucky to have the best animators in the world working on this show. And they rarely really mess up. So, but it is like, you have to be on it. You have to be watching every single second.
But it's weird to me that you would call it like messing up. Cause is it not subjective to some degree, or is it by the time they're animating, it's like you've recorded yourself acting it out and like everyone knows exactly what's supposed to happen?
For the most part it is, but like, well, with Shivering, there's so many little jokes and little gags and little things that if they're not extremely clear, and my animatics are extremely detailed and extremely clear, but also if it's not above and if the gag doesn't land, it could snowball many other jokes in the future. So it's like it has to land in the right way. And also I'm talking to Vernon, you know, who has a very specific idea of how it's going to land, and I have to do what I know he wants to. And it is, and they, you're right, they are not messing it up. Like, it is subjective, and honestly, if it were just my show, it could also, I'm a little more lenient sometimes. So for me, it's like, and maybe to a fault sometimes I'll like let it go, and then I'll be like, oh shoot, I should have asked them to, I really, that thing meant a lot to me and now I don't have it, you know?
Sure.
With this, I have to make sure I get it. Like, but also they're all really understanding, and most of them I've worked with forever. So, you know, they've known me since I was 20 directing Bright Eyes videos and animating them all myself. So
I'm curious about, just real quick, about kind of the nuts and bolts of like budgeting this type of thing. I mean, I know what you said about like a lot of people expecting it to not cost a lot because they see people on TikTok doing it in their kitchen. But like, I mean, to me, it just sounds absurdly expensive, you know?
It is.
Like having these big stages, big sets, like armies of people putting grass blades into terrain or whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
Building four different versions of this monkey paw. Like, how do you even start? How do you even start figuring out how much it's going to cost? And is there ever like a well, if we did it like Coraline level, it's going to cost this much. But if we do it South Park level, it's going to cost this much. Like, how do you even start thinking about that? The cost.
Yeah. So I do literally say, oh, it'll be more like this than this. Like, and also that's down to like the actual visual style and the amount of production value in the like design of the style, but then also in the quality of the animation. I fluctuate a lot, so like we almost always shoot on twos, which is 12 frames per second, and that helps the price a lot, but then also I'll flag scenes where I'm like, I tell the animator, I try to give every single animator a special scene that they can really milk and really do what they think is their best work ever. And then the other scenes, I'm like, it's okay if it's a little Robot Chicken, even though I love Robot Chicken. I don't want Shivering to be all Robot Chicken, you know, like style. Right. So there are scenes where we use the comedy kind of more blocky style animation to our advantage. And then there are scenes where we try to make it more like a actual film. I help with the budgeting. As much as I can, I'm very blunt with my producers about what we are going to be able to actually do for the money we have. It's a tough breakdown. And that's why like making the puppets modular was so helpful on season two. Like it, season one, our puppets, they went over like way overboard because that's what the script was asking for.
Right. And right. And when you say that the puppets are modular, to oversimplify, you're talking like, okay, like Lego minifigs. It's like, okay, we have a bunch of bodies and a bunch of heads and they all play together and you can swap them. Is that what you're saying? Or again, oversimplification, but is that close or no?
That's the case for the like extras, like mm-hmm. the background puppets. That's what we do. We swap heads and we swap hair and we swap, and they don't have mechs, the non-mech puppets, the mm-hmm. the ones that don't have faces that can move. The ones that have faces that can, well, then we have another tier that's just above that, that is sort of like a featured extra where they can open and close their mouths and mm-hmm. maybe blink if they have to.
And under five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we have.
And when you say open and close their mouths, are you changing physical mouths or their mouth literally?
They have so I guess what I'm getting at is like if they have their silicone puppets with a plastic like core head inside, and the core, the skull, is where all the mechs are, the mechanisms that operate. Mm-hmm. The eyes, and then there are some mechs built into the silicone for certain facial expressions and mouth movement. But then there's also that core, the skeleton core, has like a jaw flap. It holds the eyes. The eyelids rest into like built go into the skeleton core. What we did on season one was every single puppet had a different core and a different sculpt. Of different silicone sculpt, and that is so expensive. That's like $20,000 per puppet. What we did on season two is we had four main face shapes that we built every sculpt off of, and then we had I think one solid core. I think it was only one core except for kids or animals, and we had to, we made it so that every puppet could fit within that thing.
That
so
core.
That we could essentially assembly line it, even though we only had like a couple people in the department. Mm-hmm. I wish I could, I probably have like, I could show you it visually. Like I have probably have pieces of puppets around here.
What's fascinating to me about it is that like, you know, it's a different problem, but it is that part of directing that they don't show in the behind the scenes videos. We're really talking about like almost a producing problem, a logistics problem of like, okay, how do I improve my art or get my vision closer to what I'm aiming for through really practical, basic applications? This is a problem that you track in a spreadsheet. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no the sketchbook is helpful, but like really we're talking about math here. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like
I have incredible production managers and coordinators who are experts at that. Like that is what like a couple of them. That's literally what they've been doing since they were 19 years old. And they are geniuses.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I love it. How did you get started? Where did you gain this experience? Was it incremental that you were working up to working with this type of crew? Walk us through that a little bit. Give us the backstory.
Yeah. So I went to art school at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. They really teach you much more about how to think like an artist than how to actually make art.
Mm-hmm. It's very art school.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What they do give you is all the materials you could ever need to make whatever you want. So they, you know, you have all these critiques and things where you figure out what you're going to make and then you just go make it. They don't really teach you how to make a film mm-hmm. or how to make a sculpture or how to make a painting. So you have to, if you want to make a film, which all I ever wanted to do was direct movies, live action movies with actors, specifically like The Witches by Nicholas Roeg with puppets by Jim Henson. That was one of my biggest influences ever. I was like, okay, I need to make a film. I don't have actors. I can't afford locations. I can't afford costume, whatever. I was like, I can shoot it.
Box of clay.
For real. I can shoot it myself. Mm-hmm. I can light it myself. I can build puppets. I can animate it myself. So I started by doing stop motion. And because it was what I could do on my own, in my house, by myself, in my closet. Mm-hmm. And I started doing it that way. And because it was the only way I had at the time to tell stories, really. And so, and I would, you know, like work all summer long. I was just there all the time at school making things, using the free equipment to make whatever I wanted. So I, instead of making one film at the end of my 4 years, I had made one film every semester. And I came out of college with a reel, and I had already my actually junior thesis project was my first music video for Bright Eyes. Mm-hmm. And I was 20. And so that kind of,
Is that the At the Bottom of Everything video?
It was Bowl of Oranges was the first one. And then the second one was At the Bottom of Everything. And that one had more live action in it.
Sure.
Yeah. Bowl of Oranges had a puppet and then like, pixelation, humans pixelated, had puppets and humans. So that video I made at school using school equipment over the summer. But then the other Bright Eyes video, which was the second video I made, I had already graduated college and I had moved to Portland because I had found a lot of like awesome people there that I really like. I ended up working at a production company there that did commercials called Bent Image Lab. And I was working in their art department fabricating little tiny props and things. And they let me use their equipment, their cameras at night. And they gave me my own stage. And I shot all the stop motion for the second video at night. And then I was working during the day. And I would, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think just to like, set the stage, right? Like Bright Eyes at that time was like, you know, an indie darling. Do you know what I mean? Like for those younger listeners at home, maybe who were in school or just fresh out of school, you know, obviously the music video game has changed pretty significantly since you were making those videos. But how Bright Eyes was your college project. How did that come to be? Like Bowl of Oranges was a college project. How did it change your career as well? So like, how'd you get it and what happened afterwards?
Yeah. I totally forgot to tell you that part. Yeah. I appreciate
no,
you
that's
asking.
Okay. No, yeah.
One of the very first people I ever met at art school, literally standing in line with my parents to check in for the dorms, was this girl named Jiha Lee. And Jiha had grown up in Omaha, in Nebraska. And she and I became really good friends. There was another guy there at school named David Lewis, who was booking like small shows all over the place. And both her and David had said to me, on totally separate from each other, you need to work with Connor Oberst. You should. They introduced me to his music. I didn't know who he was. And they said, you should make a film with him. And I, at the time, was like, I didn't think I had a career in commercial filmmaking at all. I didn't even think that was even something I would ever be allowed to do. I was from Arizona. I grew up in Tucson. I had no idea that I could even ever do anything that would be, even though I had dreams of making movies, I, you know, didn't see that as see a clear path at all. So I had sort of resigned myself a little bit to, oh, I'll be an experimental film. I'll just be Stan Breckage. And not realizing that I think Stan Breckage like apparently had a lot of family money and like lived with his parents.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if there's a career in like baking film in your oven.
Yeah, like I didn't know. I was like, I'll just do that. But so when I when she was like, oh, you and Connor should work together, and David, I was like, well, yeah, okay, how about we do something where I work on the music as much as he works on the image? It's a totally experimental process. And he and I would get together and talk about that whenever he was in town. And then I went to Berlin to study for like 8 months. And while I was gone, Connor got famous. And then I came back, and one of the first things I did was he was playing in town. So I rode my bike to the show, and I walk in, and he's like, Kat, where the fuck have you been? I have an album coming out. I need a video. It's going to be my first video. I don't want anyone else to make it. Will you make it? And I was like, oh, music video? I guess I can make a music video. Sure, I'll do it. And they gave me $1,500. Mm-hmm. And that's how I made the first video. And then...
And that's Bowl of Oranges?
That's Bowl of Oranges, yeah. Yeah. And that one was made entirely at school. Yeah,
okay, so you're saying you can make a pretty good music video for $1,500.
No, please, no. It's taken me 20. It's taken me. No. It's taken me 20 years. Yeah, but it literally took me 20 years to get over that reputation of being able to make a $1,500
Music video. Right, yeah, yeah. They're like, Kat, this looks like it's a lot of like, I don't know, how much is construction paper and twine, right?
Kat's
like,
cheap. Kat's cheap.
Yeah.
She does it all herself.
We've got $1,750 for this one.
Right. Yeah.
You'll be rolling in the dough.
In a totally not good segue to your live action work, because I know I want to give your publicist some.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, that's something that's really hard, is coming from animation, convincing people that you also do live action. I still get called an animator every day. And I can animate, but I'm not that good at it. I'm not a good animator. Anyway.
Right. But so now you have a live action special that's like almost all live action, right?
Live action. It is, even the parts that are visual effects it's all live action. Yeah.
Right. And it's on Peacock. Can you tell us a little bit about Hell?
Yeah. It is called Chris Fleming's Hell, or Chris Fleming : Hell. It is, I think, in some ways a stand-up special. And then I've been calling it more of a comedy variety special. I'm really, really proud of it. And Chris is a dream. Like, I have not had a collaborator I am more connected with since Vernon. Than Chris. Like, Chris is incredible.
Did you know him before the special?
My friend Katie Delaney, who is an excellent writer, she introduced me to Chris's work, and I followed him on Twitter, and
he's primarily a stand-up?
Yes, yeah, primarily a stand-up. But then we had been following each other on social media for a while, and I was working on Waffles and Mochi on Netflix.
With a little lady named Michelle Obama.
Yeah, with Michelle Obama. So I was working on Waffles and Mochi, and we needed to cast a boy band that was like a BTS style boy band, a cheesy
great
boy
band.
Yeah. for the cheese episode. Mm. Waffles and Mochi is, for those of you that don't have children, is a show starring Michelle Obama. That is about I call it like Anthony Bourdain, but for kids with puppets. And it's about teaching kids about food so that they, you know, some of the best episodes I think are the ones that are about food that they think they find scary, and showing them that food is not scary. It's exciting. I thought of Chris as one of the boy band members. And because I knew he could dance, and I knew he could sing, and I knew he had.
And he's got a look that's kind of like the opposite of a boy band.
I tried really hard to go the route of like, how would Pee Wee cast this? How would Pete and Pete cast this? You know, like with clear adults playing like teenagers, you know? Yeah, it was him, Demi Adjigbe, and Arturo Castro as the boy band. And Chris and I just really hit it off. And then almost like 6 months, 7 months later, he texted me out of the blue and said, do you want to direct my special? And I said, of course I do. And so, yeah, that's how it happened.
That's awesome. What? How great.
Yeah.
Was it because he saw you working on set and was like, oh, I love her point of view? Or was it because he was kind of familiar with your body of work and was like, oh, this could be, I mean, I think directing a comedy special, I think you were maybe joking about it a little bit before we started recording that it, you know, it, there well, is like an easy special. Way. Yeah, there is it. But, you know, I feel like Bo Burnham does his thing and you're like, oh no, now the bar is raised, you know? And even before Bo Burnham, like,
I mean, you could argue, like, I think everyone's trying to stand out. Like, there's not a single stand-up who's like, oh yeah, it's okay if they all kind of look like everything else. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, especially now, I think they're looking to create something striking visually as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
But I feel like there's like the Jared Carmichael one and the Aziz Ansari one where you're like, they went for something, but at the end of the day, it's just them on a stage, like talking, you know, with the spotlight. Like,
yeah,
it's not as bizarre. Like, even who's the guy that did like the real like played piano and drawings?
Oh, Dimitri Martin.
Yeah, Dimitri Martin. I kind of feel like he kind of was the first, like one of the earlier people to kind of take it in like a new sketchy direction. But yeah, the Bo Burnham one is just like so insane, and the fact that he made it by himself is even, you know, crazier.
Well, and I would say what you're saying with every single one of these examples is exactly the case with Chris. It's that it has to come from the comic. It has to come from who they are inherently as a comic. And Chris is already, like, on his own, like Bo, similar to Bo, makes his own videos all the time, his own little sketches that he puts on little. I mean, I'm not using little in a condescending way. He makes very funny videos on his own that go on his Instagram and Twitter and just blow up. And he is special in that way, I think. In a way, when he said to me, like, do you want to direct my special? I kind of knew already, oh, this is not going to be just a stand-up special, which I've directed before. I've done stand-up specials. I knew it would be something that was like a combination of things or have an overall very specific to him, like concept and tone that is similar to the script with Vernon, that is a go ahead and fucking try. And I was like, this is for me. I'm excited to dive in. And like I do with all writers that I want to work with, it's always my number one goal to make what is in their head exist on screen. And so with him, because he does a lot of it himself most of the time, I was like, he's going to have so much to bring to this and so much to say. And I'm going to be able to, like I do with Vernon on Shivering, ask him, like, what color shoes is that character wearing? And he's going to be like, oh.
And have an answer immediately.
Yeah. Or that makes me think of this. And what if we add a joke here because of that? Sure. And da, da, da. And, you know, like, yeah, like really, but also, or just have an answer and no. And that's how I like to work, you know, like is like, let's dive into the minutiae of this. Let's make this like as much what you're picturing in your brain as we possibly can, you know.
It seems as though, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but that the special is a true merge as a combination of your two different aesthetics together, right? Would you agree or no? Like, how do you bring the Kat Solon special sauce to someone as distinct as Chris, for instance?
So, well, I would say that, you know, this was definitely a goal for Chris and I, you know, the two big TV things I've worked, well, Waffles and Mochi is very big, but different, but like Shivering and Chris's special, both of those things, we kind of kept small on purpose a little bit. Like, Chris's style of making everything by himself, usually, we really wanted to keep that feeling we didn't want it to be the most polished, perfect. Like, we didn't want it to look slick. Like, oh, look, Chris is now a multimillionaire and he can do whatever he wants. We wanted to really capture Chris's essence. And in that, those challenges that you have when you have like a slightly lower budget than you would hope, not that that's a bad, it's not always a bad thing, unless people aren't being paid properly. But, you know, when people are being paid properly and you still have like a somewhat low budget, you have to, you really like, I feel like you bring more of your own personal style to it by proxy. And I think Chris is very smart for picking me, knowing that our styles would work well together. But, you know, when I have like, you know, like a bigger, on a bigger show, it's easier for me. It's easy for me to like match some other kind of style that isn't just what I do. But I also, he really wanted me to, bring out what I do. And also, we have such a kindred thing that it was inherent to him as well. But we still talked through every little thing. Like the first time I ever drew one of the characters that we call the Theater Bover, I drew it probably about 10 times before we picked one that we liked, you know? So,
and is it similar to, you know, thumbnails and walking through New York? Is there like a similar sort of journey to it? Are you seated next to each other? Are you traveling? Talk us through that part.
For this, it was more, you know, Chris was actually touring, getting ready for the special. So he wasn't around very much. So I really was just texting all the time. We were texting all the time. And I draw a storyboard. I even my live action stuff, especially if it has like practical effects or visual gags, I still storyboard that too. On a union show, I thumbnail it and then I hand it to a storyboard artist who makes it better. I, like I said, draw everything to explain myself. So even for me just to shot list it or just to figure out where we're going
to
shoot.
Conceptualize it. Right. Yeah. Totally.
Drawing.
Yeah. Cool.
If I've learned anything from doing this for 20 years, it's how to be flexible and how to not let one small thing ruin your whole show, you know, like, and how to make things work even when they aren't what you thought that how it would come out. So it doesn't always, you know, it's not always perfect. Sometimes things come to set and I'm like, oh shoot, I should have said this instead. I didn't give them the right directive in the beginning. Why wasn't I picturing it that way? But that's sort of, you know, it's sort of part of it in a way. It's sort of, I think, adds character, like in the long run.
Sure. Yeah.
So I tell myself at least.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, Kat, thanks so much for talking to us, for teaching us about everything, about life, the universe.
I want to say one more thing about, you know, the special for Chris and just related to his, we really wanted to make a special that felt, in his words, not cool. He didn't want to try to be cool in any way. That's the first thing he said to me was,
Kat, like, I hired you for one reason.
Yeah, you are not cool. And I love it. We wanted it to feel truly authentic and tactile. We literally want the audience to feel like they're there watching the show, or that they're in Chris's head, or that they're on stage with Chris. They're with him in his own like feelings of what it's like to be a performer and to grapple with simultaneously the quote unquote hell of performance being the thing you love more than anything, but also being a performer, meaning that you have to get up practically, you know, in your head naked in front of thousands of people all the time and tell them everything about you in a way that is so scary and so intense. And it's, I just want to make sure I get, you know, that feeling across, you know, and and it really creates this kind of, I'm really proud of the special overall because it creates this like surrealist stream of consciousness thing that I think truly helps you get to know the comic Chris more than other than a conventional special where they're on stage and you're watching them from 30 feet away and it's they're all bright and shiny and, you know, perfect, you know,
under a spotlight or whatever. Yeah.
We tried really hard to really make it feel like you're there with them.
Check it out. It's on Peacock.
Well, Kat, before we endorse, where can people keep track of all the cool projects that you've got going on?
Honestly, mostly my Instagram. I love Instagram. It's a little
can
bit
I
of a
tell you about
problem.
Instagram, Kat? You've talked so much in this interview about how you draw your thoughts and draw and you communicate with everyone on drawing. I went on your Instagram and there are some amazing images you have from your Adult Swim show, from The Shivering Truth. But like, put more drawings on there. We want to see.
Oren is on a real like behind the scenes jag. And truly, though, I have seen, we've been doing the show for a long time. I see when he posts a really good like breakdown of like, oh, this is how I got this shot.
That's
or
so
like
cool.
It's they're very good and it gets him work.
I want to do more of those. Yeah. I really do. Yeah. I do
gets
have a whole
quadruple, even quintuple bid opportunities.
Oh, hey, I do have a whole story highlight of Shivering Truth behind the
I
scenes.
I didn't okay. flip through okay. that. It's very, very cool. But I want to see your drawings. I want to see like
Thank
your
you.
Thought process.
I do need to do that more. I really appreciate that.
When I see like seven different wigs you made for dolls, I'm like, I'm never going to be able to do that. But when I see you draw, I'm like, oh, I could see how this drawing led to this thing. Like, I'm inspired, you know?
Yeah, good. I appreciate it.
CATSOLEN is your Instagram account.
Yeah. Well, Kat, do you have a minute or two more to endorse with us?
Oh, yeah, that. Yes. Oh, the
unpaid endorsements.
Okay, so I've got two. One that's very LA specific, unfortunately. So if you're not in Los Angeles, apologies. Have either of you been to Benny Boy? It's a new brewery and cider house in like Boyle Heights, I guess, is maybe the neighborhood.
I have not been, but I have heard of it for a specific reason that you might bring up.
Oh, well, we'll see. Maybe not. Do you like cider? My reason is that their cider is great.
I do not drink conventional beer, so I do drink ciders.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, so Los Angeles doesn't have any cider houses or cideries. Yeah. I don't know what you're supposed to say. It's bigger on the East Coast because they have lots of apples. So I think Benny Boy is the only place that brews their own cider in greater Los Angeles. They're great. I was going to say the pro or con, depending on what side of the fence you're on. No children are allowed at Benny Boy unless they're like in a stroller. So like that's cool if you don't have kids, and it's a bummer if you do have kids.
Yeah.
But I get it. If you've ever gone to Golden Road, which is another popular East Side brewery, it is it's basically a Chuck E. Cheese, but the adults are slightly more drunk than a Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah. So I get why you maybe don't want that vibe. Anyway, so Benny Boy, if you're an Angelino, this conversation reminded me, Kat, you'd mentioned Pete and Pete as a touch point.
Yeah.
Do you remember the early Pete and Pete films, which are on YouTube, are basically just like kind of like short video essays before they got mm-hmm. the TV show? They basically had like promo length little bumpers. It's obviously pre TikTok, but it's like a really cool, frankly, kind of low budget touch point of like world building and storytelling with this fun, weird cast. So,
and they're on YouTube.
They're on YouTube. Yeah, you can see all the old Pete and Pete shorts very easily, either in a playlist or I think maybe somebody put them together as a compilation. And whenever I'm like feeling uninspired and need to do really short form content, that's a thing that I revisit all the time.
That's really awesome. I didn't know they were on YouTube. That's so cool.
Yeah. Well, you got the next 5 minutes spoken for, Kat.
thank goodness.
Yeah. Kat, what you got?
Okay. I got two also. One is, I'm really good friends with this musician named Mary Lattimore. She's a brilliant harpist. I have a lot of good friends that impress the hell out of me with the things they do. But not everybody like blows my mind. Like not everybody, I'm like, how the hell did you do that? And her music is that way. And I just love it. And it's so cinematic and gorgeous. And I often actually hand paint her tour posters for fun.
Wait, what's her name again?
Mary Lattimore, MaryLattimore. She has a new album coming out October 6th called Goodbye Hotel Arcata. And I highly recommend it. But all of her albums are good. The other thing that's a more cerebral thing, it's kind of connected to Los Angeles, but also just making things with your hands. Long time ago, I somehow ended up on the phone with one of my favorite filmmakers, who's Mike Jitlov, who made The Wizard of Speed and Time, which is also on YouTube, and I highly recommend it. It's a movie that made me want to make movies as a child. I ended up on the phone with him because he was selling some equipment that I wanted, and he had listed his personal phone number on his website, and I called it, and we ended up talking for 2 hours. And something that he told me, knowing that I was in animation and doing making small things with my hands, this is right around the same time as making that first Bright Eyes video, he said, make sure every now and then during the day, throughout the day, to step outside and to focus your eyes on the furthest possible thing that you can. And then as you're looking at that, bring your focus back to yourself by looking at different things that are closer and then back out. And just make sure you do that so you don't, you know, your eyes don't go bad too soon. And so I've always done that. And that also relates to, I really love the Stairway Walks in Los Angeles and the Hidden Staircase book and taking long walks in Los Angeles. So that's, yeah.
I love it. Like, yeah, just getting a little air, right? Which I imagine in particular with like animation is a thing where like any task where it's like repetitive and inside, yeah. I can just get lost in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just, or like VFX, all of that stuff. You're just kind of like, there's a flow state to it, which is beautiful and kind of what you're chasing. But then you're like, oh, wait, it's been 2 days. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look up and you can't see anything anymore.
Yeah.
You're...
yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Those are really good. That was kind of expertly done, unpaid endorsement.
Kaplan, what you got? Yeah.
They're so bad.
Hit us with that belly flop, buddy.
That I'm going to do four of them. I just finished Barry season 4. It's pretty good. It's like if you, I don't know, I feel like a lot of people fell off of that show.
I did. I loved it so much. And then it just made me too sad in the middle. And I was like, I can't anymore.
Yeah, it's like the comedy, it's still, you know, like funny in a way, but the final season, just like every episode, like when you think something's going to happen, just the exact opposite happens just every single time. And it's just like a masterclass in plot mechanics and setups and payoffs. Character.
George Saunders would appreciate that.
That's, yeah. Always, so yeah, I really enjoyed it. You know, Bill Hader directed every single episode the last season. And yeah, it's like, it has that thing that Game of Thrones, I feel like, did so expertly, where something happens and you're like holding your breath, and then it says directed by Bill Hader, you know? And it, you're like, oh God, okay, I'll watch the next episode. like, I mean, I know every show has cliffhangers, Breaking Bad, like all these Sopranos, like all these shows did a good job of it. But like, I feel like Game of Thrones is like, it was like depressing. It was like hit you in the face when you saw the director credit, because you were like so engaged, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like someone like chopping in a giant cube of ice in half. I don't know. It's just, just like viscerally annoying. Other thing, I realized I read this on Reddit the other day, and I was like, and it, someone was like, you should clean out your dryer ducts, you know, the air duct for your laundry.
Oh, in between, yeah. In between your house and the outside, you mean?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, whatever. And then today I walked by the dryer duct. It was just fully clogged. And I asked my wife, I'm like, has the dryer like not been working recently? She's like, yeah, there's something. I'm like, oh. So clean out your dryer ducts. Matt had endorsed these like Raka Raka videos. I went down like a long wormhole, and I think the order this episode comes out might not make sense for this endorsement, but if you just go to YouTube and type Raka Raka interviews and see these two twin filmmakers be interviewed on any show, they're kind of known for these insane stunts they do. And every time they go on like a Good Morning America or something, they just start fighting with each other and throwing each other over couches and slamming each other into the tables, and no one knows what to do with them. Everyone is like, the cameraman, everyone's like, Should we stop this?
What's happening? There's acts of violence happening. That's just great. I cannot wait.
Funny. I love it. And, I want to watch that.
And then my last one is I read this, you know, stupid thing on Instagram. It's like 30 things I now know at 30 that I wish I told myself at 20 or whatever. So one of these dumb lists, but one of the things was normalized daytime naps. And I know a lot of people are like talking about this a lot, but if you, instead of it's like, oh, I'm so tired, I just need to take a nap. You think of it more as like, hey, I can like get 2 days worth of energy in one day, like just re-energize real quick in the 20 minute nap. I have kind of been doing it a little bit. Don't tell anyone.
I love naps. But,
it's like, I do feel like if it's kind of the perfect 20 minute nap and I like kind of cover my eyes with something, then
do,
I'm like,
do you do the espresso thing? Do you like the, I think
so
we talked about
it. I endorsed that. Yeah. Like a couple episodes ago. And it just depends. I usually I'm very weird. I have like a second cup of coffee at 3 p.m. every day. So it just depends when the nap.
Yeah, the post-lunch coffee. Yeah.
For that or not. Anyhow, those are my four random ones. Well, thanks again, Kat, for coming. Congrats on all your shows, all your success, all your awesome things that are going on. We can't wait to see what's next for you. Everyone should check out Chris Fleming Hell on Peacock. And if you want us to forward anything on to Kat, you know, email us. We're justshootitpod@gmail.com. We're on Instagram and Threads now at Just Shoot It Pod. I am at O Kaplan on those same things.
And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow across all social media. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. And produced by Tyler Small. And you're listening to music by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.